Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
The following footage is certified PG. Pretty great.
It's Anomaly Presents with your friends, the Podcastronauts.
Sounds like a lot of supernatural baloney to me.
Supernatural, perhaps. Baloney, perhaps not.
Hey. Welcome to another episode of Anomaly Presents with us, the Podcastronauts.
We are the present.
We are the present. We are the past. We are the future. We are everything. And you are with us tonight. What an auspicious start for that.
That's a lot. That's a lot. That puts a lot on us.
That was deep. Yeah. So, this is the Anomaly Presents podcast, the podcast about the genre movies that inspired a genre film festival. That is the Anomaly Film Festival here in beautiful, historic Rochester, New York, at the beautiful, historic Little Theater and the beautiful, historic Dryden Theater in the beautiful, historic month of November, 5th through the 9th, if I recall correctly. Is that right?
That sounds good. One second.
5th through 9th. Let me
go to the website.
You got it.
I'll tell you what. This is a free podcast. You can do some work. Check it out. Anomalyfilmfest.com. It'll tell you the right dates, even if I didn't get it right. God damn it.
Do your own research. Oh, boy.
Do your research. That has never gone wrong.
In recent history,
doing your own research has not gone wrong once. Jesus Christ. This is the Anomaly Presents podcast. My name is Matt Austin. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the fantasy classic, I guess. Willow from 1988.
Meg, it's fine.
A little spoiler alert for Megan's feelings. It's fine.
I have thoughts. We have thoughts. That's why we're here. If we didn't have thoughts, this would be a very boring hour. But we have thoughts. This is the Anomaly Presents Willow. My name is Matt Austin. Joining me, as always, the Podcastronauts, we've got Megan Murphy.
It's me. Woohoo.
And Kristen Pelk Pacheco. Hi, KP.
Hey, everybody.
And we are here to talk about Fantasy Training Wheels. We are here to talk about Ron Howard's and George Lucas's opus, Willow, which I can say with full honesty, I went to see this at the Stone Ridge Theater here in Rochester it came out. My dad took my brother and I. We went. We saw the movie. We went over to Toys R Us. We got toys when we left. We got home. We had our new little toys. I think I got a Mad Mardigan. My brother got the titular action figure, Willow, just to specify. And my mom asked me how the movie was, and I said, it was okay.
You got a toy out of it, so...
That might have taken it from a 4 to a 6. This is an interesting movie because I feel like that's kind of everybody's general feel. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I feel like that's the general feeling about it, is that it's a perfectly cromulent movie. We'll get into it. Partially the reason we were doing this is, one, we wanted to do a fantasy movie. Two,
a toy.
Yes.
They had, surprisingly enough, a Lucasfilm joint had pretty dope toys. That they had perfectly. It was a very toyetic film. But
they had the toyetic film. You are on to like, let's. I'm
so, in. So yeah.
They so had like, the worms. Could you build the castle? What?
I'm trying to remember. I don't. I think they had
up the toys.
They had a couple places.
I should know
Ken, right?
Too, right?
Ooh, they had the who's this the guy with the villain with the skull mask.
Yeah, that was cool.
Okay, and then I see the
yeah, I feel like, yeah, that guy too. This is rough. I'm like, yeah, and that one? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm terrible with the names. Not a single name other than Willow.
Yeah. I'm glad they named a movie after him. It's helpful.
Exactly. And I'll be honest, the only reason I remember, well, I remember my Mad Mardigan for two reasons. One, because I had the toy. And two, it's Val Kilmer. And Val Kilmer.
Exactly.
Rest in peace. One of the greatest film actors of our era.
Yeah, he's
effortless charisma. As I'm going to say, the film's fine. Mad Mardigan's very good in it. I am definitely a sucker for the oh, what a mess. Oh, it turns out he really is talented. I like that setup, and I think Vale is very good. Like that is a skill of his. Is like, oh yeah, no, I know all this stuff. I just have nothing to prove. So yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I'm all on board. Plus, do you know Mad Mardigan's one word?
Yeah, the subtitles.
I was like, really? And I just double checked a couple places just to make sure that everyone wasn't doing it wrong. I'm like, no, Mad Mardigan. Nope. I assumed it was someone called him Mad and his name was Mardigan. No, his parents named him Mad Mardigan.
Or it could be his last name and his first name could be like Lance or something. He just didn't want to go by it.
Kyle Mad Mardigan.
Kyle Mad Mardigan. He's like, no,
I can't. Did anyone in this name did anyone in this movie have a, no, they all have crazy names.
They did the classic fantasy thing, which again I appreciate, right? Yes, yeah. Mad Mardigan, Battlemaster Fighter, and Bard of Eloquence. Yes, and I do feel like it had that like the classic thing where like it has world building, and part of the world building is these are names in this world. I don't have a problem with it. They put the effort in, like yeah, that's kind of how your classic high fantasy is. Names or names that sound almost like our names but slightly different, like she's not Sasha, she's Shorsha. You know.
Almost Celtic but not.
Yeah. I got no problem, like that's always fun to play around with. Now do I think they nailed memorable names? Not really.
No. Rule but and the effort was there. Are unfortunate names.
I remember Laura Dana and I feel bad because it sounds like a yogurt.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. Who knew Willow had a last name? Willow Ufgood.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's where I'm like, okay, you're trying a little too hard. I get it. Ufgood. I understand. That's okay, movie. You don't have, but again, here's the other thing. And maybe we're talking a little bit about when you're talking about fantasy movie training wheels.
Yeah.
It does feel aimed a bit at like middle school.
Yeah. So
100%.
I watched this a couple weeks ago now, and my kid is very much the sword and sorcery dragons, like that's his wheelhouse. Where I am a sci-fi cyberpunk guy, like he is all about sword and sorcery. So we are trying to figure out 80s fantasy movies because I mean, let's be honest, that's their stock and trade, right? Like there are so many good 80s fantasy movies, and it kind of fell off in the last 40 years. I hate saying that out loud.
Oh God. No, I don't like those numbers.
35. What was this? 88. So we're coming up on 40.
20. It's always 20 years ago. Right. That's the limit I'm willing to accept.
It feels like it should be 20. And here it's 20 always. But 20. Nah, that's Yeah, my brother is like in his mid 40s and he was born in the 80s. So I'm like, oh shit.
Stop. No.
That doesn't
Let's
even
go back
feel
to
right.
Fantasyland.
So
I'm
yeah,
sorry,
so
I was upset.
Fantasyland. Yeah. So we were trying to think of fantasy movies that wouldn't be a total bummer cuz right, you've got Neverending Story which will gut you.
Yeah.
You know, Legend might be a little scary.
Yeah, I was going to say like it's not a bummer but it has intense moments.
Yeah. Like, Labyrinth is
you know, kind of on the edge. You could probably get away with a labyrinth or a dark crystal. I'm sure those will be episodes coming soon.
Muppets the easy win.
Yeah, but this one feels like it's like straight over the plate. It's just you took Star Wars, you took space out of it, and then slapped castles into it. So it's like real easy entry to your swords and sorcery, I feel like.
I think you're right. It feels as a TTRPG nerd, I can bring in that like, yeah, it feels like, you know, hey, here's our first D&D campaign. It's got all the classics. Okay. Do you want to be the magic wielder? Do you want to be the fighter with the sword? I guess, do you want to be the friend of the magic guy? Do you want to be a brownie? It falls apart a little, but it has that like,
we don't have the full cast.
It's not a complete adventuring party, but that's okay. But like, it has that like, oh, there's a thing that has to be done, and you have to it has a reluctant hero, and it's very understandable as a story for something like, oh yeah, the classic fantasy where you have to defeat the evil to save the realm kind of situation. And you have to do it with friends.
Yeah, and Ron Howard, I was watching some like behind the scenes stuff, and he was saying him and George kept saying like, "What would our kids like?" And I just googled it, and Bryce Dallas Howard would have been like 8. So
I was going to say she and I are the same age.
Bryce. Yeah. It is, and of course, maybe that is revisiting it, but that's a. But even like when I was young, I don't remember going nuts for it. I remember like, oh yeah, I should. You know, I think I was like kind of into fantasy. And I think even then I was like, I should like this more than I do. Like I was feeling guilty over it, but I'm like young. So I don't know how to deal with that. I didn't watch it hard enough.
You can't put your finger on like what.
Yeah. What is it?
Make you completely enraptured.
Right. That's it. I felt like I should have, this thing should have enraptured me. I should have like, oh my God. And there's like, oh my God. And there's the girl has a sword with red hair and she's so cool. Like that should have been my jam. I should have been all about that.
Yeah. And it just, and for whatever reason.
And it feels like it's 2 hours. Like feel like it's a little long for like a kid's fantasy movie, right? Like I feel like Dora, I think was like an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes. You get in, you get out, and you're done.
And then jungle like, puzzles.
Yeah. You do have jungle puzzles. Maybe it's the pacing or the characters. Yeah. Like I think
that's exactly what it is. It's the pacing is kind of pokey and it's trying to hit all the beats and it just doesn't. Yeah. I did a little bit of research too, and I poked into it because I was like, some things just don't make sense. So this was a significantly longer film at a certain point because Willow had 3 acorns. What happened to the third one? Oh yeah, it got cut out of the movie.
You know what?
Classic being George Lucas.
Do you know what saved us? This being what you said, 88.
Yeah.
It would absolutely have been designed to be a trilogy. If it had been made later.
Forget it. Absolutely.
So I'm saying George Lucas just sit there clickety-clacking all day. And
There's a lot of ideas. I think there's a lot of ideas here. And I think, and this might go to how we were talking about how Ron Howard is a very professional director. He's put together good films, even great films. And yet, at least for me, there isn't a Ron Howard touch. And I feel like particularly in a fantasy film, a lot of fantasy is style. Now, it doesn't mean over substance, but it is style. You are building a world. Sure. You are provide everything has to like be on screen, whether it's pointed out or just in the background. And I feel like, okay, again, another thing. Ron's fine. I feel like I don't want to ding him, but I also feel that like character is not his strength. And I feel like for me, a fantasy film lives or dies on its characters. You want to follow these characters. You want to care about them and worry about them. And these characters are fine. They have like, I understand them. I know who they're supposed to be, but I don't feel like I'm not with them. I'm watching them, but I'm not like with them.
Yeah. And that's kind of the George Lucas way though. Cause if you look at the people that directed the last 2 Star Wars movies, they were just like journeyman directors. I mean, Richard Marquand or Irvin Kershner, You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like that's just kind of his stock in trade, but he didn't have the groundwork, you know, right?
You know, you know what it is? I think he's best at rogues, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, talk about the characters that work the best. It's Han Solo and it's Mad Mardigan.
And that's it. Han Solo is just like, you know, Mad Mardigan is just maybe 2 degrees away from Han Solo.
Yeah. And you have to have somebody who, like, you think of what, like Carrie Fisher, who have to have actors who bring life to characters beyond the maybe like architecture he sets up and build like characterization and life and something into them, like give them a spark.
Yeah, I like that.
I think Warwick Davis, what was he? He was like 17 at the time.
So he was very young.
Yeah.
Charming in his own way, but it doesn't have like that little extra oomph and
It's hard to buy him as like a father and a husband when he's 17.
Yeah.
Because I like that. Here's the thing. I like that you have your main character as a husband, as a father, because then you have stakes. You have stakes. You can't have that. You know, you're not just like this young person just starting out who hasn't learned stuff. He has kids. Like, maybe that's one of the things that's missing for me is I should feel it more from Willow, where I'm not supposed to be out on the big adventure. I need to go back and like work at home, but he can't say no because of the stakes.
Yep.
Which I like. You know, you take a character who wouldn't be the hero and they are the hero because they have to be. That's fascinating. But yeah, you're right. When you say he's 17, that is asking so much of someone who's not even 20.
You don't have the gravity yet. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? You're just kind of pretending instead of really acting or pulling out any life experience, because your life experience was you were Wicket the Ewok in Return of the Jedi a year and a half ago.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting, and I think he's great, and it's fascinating to watch his career arc from Willow to Leprechaun, because Leprechaun was only 5 years later, I think.
So
he was 23.
you can see him having his confidence there.
Yeah,
I think like as you go through, like we're talking about the acting in Leprechaun, but for real, like no matter what Leprechaun movie, you know, Warwick Davis is going to be the best thing in it because he's 100% committed and you can see the talent there. This is someone who now is like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. I know exactly. I know the tone to hit. I know how to say limericks and full Shakespearean like monologues and more in space. But I like you brought that up because like, he's 17. He's not untalented. He was just young, and that's asking a lot.
It's so hard to pull from that.
Especially as your lead. Like, you have to carry that, and it needs to be offset maybe by other, right? Like, by a supporting cast that does that, and you kind of have, without maybe having, like, the full party to weigh on, because his people just peace out. I died at the moment. Like, first, they're like, cool, we found a criminal, goodbye. Like, and the first
baby to the sky.
Fred is like, he's like, go, are you sure? Okay, goodbye.
You know, it's weird. Again, maybe I'm just being too much of a nerd, but I almost think it would have benefited from a classic party structure. Because then you get the character types. You get the character types and they play off of each other and you learn about the characters instead of like Willow's friend. He seems nice. Mad Mardigan's awesome. And then like Sorsha has like, listen, I want to love her. I'm supposed to love the tough ass babe. And I just feel like there's nothing there. It should be like amazing. She's the daughter of the villain. She's been raised as a warrior. She looks great. Fantastic. I love the design, but there's like nothing. They're not even like, and I'm like, okay, if we're going to do the romance thing, then I need to know her too. I need to figure out like, why would she find this guy wandering into her tent? Like, I get it. It's Val Kilmer. I understand, but like on a meta textual thing, but here I need to know, like, tell me that she's like, she's like, hasn't been able to have this. Tell me that she wants to live a different life and her, you know, like that stuff. And I feel like it's not there.
And I mean, it worked for Val Kilmer because he eventually married her. Joanne Whalley, they were married for ages.
Oh, wow.
So it's nuts. And so there was an actual attraction and yet the film didn't capture it.
And you don't feel the chemistry. That is bonkers. That's why. To me.
That's wild.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. They were together for like 20 years almost, I think.
Wow.
Like, yeah. They were married for a while. Not that I'm a Kilmer file, but I am.
But there's nothing wrong. That I think it's all right. Like, we got to watch Tombstone and do an episode on it. Okay.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. 11 years they were right married. Now. They got married in 88 when this came out and divorced in 96. Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was charming and he had his shirt off most of the time. So
like movie, I get it. Like, it's on a basic, like, eyeball level. I'm there. I just need to feel it. I need a little more. You know, I need a little feeling involved.
But
I think it is character. It is like, okay, so, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, KB.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Because we're talking about, okay, so let's talk about, like, the villain. I should love, like, oh, good, a witch. Yes, she wants power. I'm in. I should be, like, always, like, wanting to go back. What's she doing? Sacrifice a baby. Oh, but, like, I feel like she, like, the actress, I'm forgetting her name, is good in what she does.
Jean Marsh.
Yeah, Jean Marsh is great. But I feel like there's nothing there. Like, she's doing what she can with a character that, like, I don't understand. Like, give me something. Give me something to root for or understand or go, like, I don't know. I felt like it either wasn't wild enough evil or understandable bad choices, like poor choices, you know?
Yeah. She really, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rare when you say she really should have kind of eaten more of the scenery, but it should have been a bigger performance.
Yeah, if you're going to go that direction, just camp it up. Like there's no one dressing as the evil sorceress, you know, for drag brunch, and that's sad. Especially when you have a big old, like, hag versus hag fight at the end.
Oh,
I'm down for. I love the fact that, like, the good sorceress, like the good, like, also she doesn't turn into a hot lady at any point.
Which was
that
did which is great. Off. So I should love this. I should love this end when they're like whap, you know, like. But I felt like there was nothing there because I should feel these like. Like, almost like frail body, strong power. Like, I should feel that shit, you know? And I just felt like, oh, man. I wanted it to be Merlin and Mad Madam Mim kind of fight.
Yeah.
From Sword of Stone. And I feel it trying to be it, and it's not.
No, I mean.
They should know each other, hate each other. Like, you should feel, like, decades of disdain. They should be grand dames, you know? Like, they should have, they each had the same husband at one point, you know, at different times. I guess I'm making it a Death Becomes Her.
Is it like a Joan Crawford, Betty Davis kind of thing you're going for? Is that what you're.
And my brain's thinking into the Spider-Verse with Aunt May and.
Oh my God. Was that Lily Tomlin doing Aunt May?
Yeah.
That is one of the most perfect, like, performances of a line. Their entire history is in, like, was it? Oh, it's Liv. Their entire lives together are that sentence. And
we know she says only her friends call her Liv. So you know that there's history. So much of a history there of their beef or whatever went bad.
Right?
You don't have a whole story, but you can paint a picture.
Yeah, and that's like C or D plot in that film, and it is more fleshed out.
Yeah.
Their plot is literally that interaction, and you're like, yep, these bitches. There's history.
Go to AO3 and see what other information we have. No.
I know I'm not the only one who's like, uh-huh. I mean, you don't hate this strongly if you didn't love it at one point. that's the energy I kind of like would have loved.
Yeah, and you're talking about fleshing it out. I'm looking at, you know, the research I usually do for these things, which is looking at the Wikipedia. Lucas conceived the idea for the film in 1972, approaching Howard to direct in 1985. So he'd been thinking of this actively pre-Star Wars. Fleshed out enough.
I wonder, right? Because, like, you know, we kind of know, like, some of his inspirations, like Star Wars. Like, there's Hidden Fortresses in there. Like, you can see, there's got to be out there. Like, what film or films was he thinking of, or did he not have a clear enough, like, template?
So
I'm trying to think of something.
He handed this off. The screenwriter is Robert Dolman. I'll give you a couple of his credits. WKRP in Cincinnati,
Oh, yeah.
And then SCTV for 5 years.
okay. I mean, this is all stuff I like. Just
he came off of SCTV and wrote Willow.
Wanted to flex the muscles there.
And immediately after, Far and Away.
What? That is that the Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman one?
Sure is. And then the Banger Sisters with Goldie Hawn and Susan Sarandon.
This is fascinating to me.
How to Eat Fried Worms.
That's like more of a like a kids kind of. Okay.
Out of Brooklyn, which there is no link for. I don't know if that ever existed or not. And then came back for the Willow TV show. So that is Bob Dolman's entire career. Also married to Andrea Martin at one point.
Oh, hey. SCTV is good then.
And his sister was Martin Short's ex-wife.
Oh. Well, I mean, you know, like they were like, what, near Toronto for a while. Phil, they, you know, it got cold. Like, I bet there was a lot of, yeah. Everyone married everyone at one point.
Uh-huh, exactly.
But
fascinating that he's the guy.
Yeah, that's, you know what? It sounds like another professional. And I feel like I'm using professional as like some sort of pejorative here. But like, I feel like.
This is bitch.
Yeah, with fantasy in particular, I think you just really, you need the touch. You need to have that spark that makes it yours. Like why does something like Labyrinth work, right? It's got that, like, it feels like it's about to get darker than it does. Yeah. It has David Bowie. It has the, like, Henson Muppets, you know? Like, and you understand. You're like, oh, I get it. She's like, she doesn't want to babysit. And she's been reading these like fantasy kind of thing. I get it. A lot of us have been her. Like, we understand. We're like, yeah, I can understand some decisions that you would make at this point.
And that's it. There's the human element to it. There's Henson, which there's that whole creative spark, regardless of what it was, whatever he was involved in for good or for bad, it was going to have that juice to it. Right. Yeah,
it would have its own uniqueness. Yeah. And so
Bowie, like Bowie at that point, I mean, that was right around like just after Thin White Duke. And that's when he was doing like the weird stuff with Mick Jagger and all that shit. Right. Like
it was an out of the box hiring decision that made it. And I think maybe that's it. Maybe Willow does everything good. Well, like everything is done fine. And there's not a wild pitch in there.
No. Yeah. It is for me, it is a reskin of Star Wars to a fantasy genre. So it's, and I mean, you can say that for really anything since Gilgamesh, right? Like that's just
that's but it almost like doesn't get it right because I keep coming back to the party.
Right.
But I feel like you need like your side characters that you can get obsessed over. Right. You need the ones who like, and then they each have their story that comes in and that's all meaning. And like, I don't know.
And Commander Dante in the chat, David wasn't even the first choice for Labyrinth. That blows my mind. I don't know how that could have even been.
Which it tells you when you get it right, when you look back and go, how could it have been anything else?
Dante, do you know who it was?
Because I'm fascinated on that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like all these choices. Maybe here's the thing. Okay. Here's my thing. And I do not actually know the production history of Willow, but here's my theory. Maybe everything just went too well. Maybe everything just went too smoothly. You know how you need something like you need Bruce to break down to get Jaws.
Yeah. Cause it's the first movie after, except for like the direct to TV or direct to video Ewok stuff that Lucas really did. So it's like the first major motion picture for Lucas after Jedi.
Yeah.
It's Ron Howard's first one after. Oh, it was Michael Jackson. Get out of town.
Wild. What?
That is buck wild. Thank you, Dante. That's nuts. I can't even imagine that movie.
So David Bowie then said, oh, I guess I do it, but you have to let me write the music. They were like, please, David, write some music. He was like, I insist. That's amazing.
This is right after Diamond Dogs cratered, I think, because he had the whole Diamond Dogs tour that he couldn't make the money for. And that was a crazy thing. Like, if you ever get the chance to read about that, that's wild. But yeah, so I think that's really what it is that it may have gone too well, or it was just not to use professional as a pejorative again, but you had the Lucas machine and the Spielberg machine because he had just done Cocoon. Yeah. So
they
it's
didn't
just
have to fight for anything. At that point, people would just give them what they wanted. And
it's the blank slate theory. Shout out to Griffin Newman.
I will say something about this movie that was cool, and I don't know if it's in the Wikipedia, but when it comes to the special effects, this is kind of like one of the ones where they created morphing, like when he does the whole thing. And so that's how we get like the technique and the visual effects involved in that is where we get the melting face in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and eventually where we end up with Terminator, like two. So it was kind of at the forefront of that.
Well, I don't know if I said before, like it looks good. I think fantasy is a tough genre to nail visually because you have to create everything. Everything has to be of the world you're creating. And it is, everything looked good. Now, did it have a distinct visual style? No. Which is maybe another ding is like this world looks very fantasy pack that I downloaded. But it's a good version of that. It's a very good version of that.
At the same time, I wonder if that's not just because that's what we know now as this is default fantasy. You know what I mean? Because we had that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Peter Jackson. I think that's really what it is, right? Is that we've gone through 40 years of seeing these fantasy movies where they all kind of look vaguely the same.
If you look at the map paintings, like it looks like that. You can look at the map paintings of the backgrounds and you're like, this is your typical castle. This is your typical village. Like they're beautiful. Right. But yes, like it's
exactly
you've been looking
that.
At
yeah.
them for quite some time at this point. So there's nothing spectacular or extra about it, right?
No, it definitely is, you know, a step and a half above Monty Python and the Holy Grail castles and stuff. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, those were real castles in the first one, but anyway.
Yeah, they're smart. They're like, oh no, we filmed it where we live. We got castles and shit.
You can't throw a rock without hitting a castle here. We'll just write jokes.
Which is maybe a reason why that works. They're like, yeah, no, actually history happened here. We're going to go up and insult each other and do bad French accents. They're like, hell yeah. Fuck you, history. You had your chance. It's our time now.
As an aside, not to keep going back to my kid, I also showed him Monty Python and Holy Grail about a week after we watched Willow.
Yeah.
He has never been more angry than at the end of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh my God. Is this like his first kind of meta fall apart? That, you know what? It comes for us all. It gets us all once.
Yeah.
Oh,
no. That's where it ends. Yeah, bud.
Oh no.
That's it.
Yeah, the police come. Yep. Oh my God. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, because at first he was like, why are the police there? I was like, well, because they killed a lot of people.
That's world shattering. Oh my God. Okay. Also, Matt, what we need to do is I feel like we need to do an additional 15 minutes at the end of this. And it's just like, what did you show your kid and how did he react? Because I'm deeply invested. I'm like, tell me about the things I liked as a kid. What do you think, child? Yes. Not that it matters to me, but it deeply matters to me.
I'll tell you, Big Trouble in Little China is in the hopper for very soon.
Okay.
It's coming.
Oh, I want to know.
Action movie, kind of like.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to know Jack Burton and know that, like, hey, you know what? Sometimes the protagonist isn't the hero, and that's okay. You can follow the sidekick.
It's going to blow his little mind. It's going to be so fun.
Yeah. Ask him who the hero in the film is. Okay, mm-hmm. Watch it. Who was the hero and who's the sidekick? Whose story is it, really?
I cannot wait. You know, we've talked about how much I love that movie. I can't wait to infest it on him. But yeah, Willow.
Going back to
films in the late 80s.
Here's the thing. We could talk about Big Trouble because Big Trouble has such a visual design of its own.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is so visually distinctive. You know, it is a world that it's our world, but it's not. It is a fantasy. It is, you know, things happen in that world that do not happen in this world. But the way it's designed and the way the story is told, you go with it because you're like, yeah, magic.
Yeah,
no, that's right. Trucks and weather gods and everything in between. And it's, but like John Carpenter's a visually and character distinctive director. Like, just think of anything Kurt Russell's done with him. And you can think about, like, you can explain that character. You know what that character... I know Snake Plissken. Yeah. I know that guy totally. I know what he'd do in almost every situation.
Right. That's it. Snake Plissken, MacReady.
Yeah.
Jack Burton.
Good old Jack Burton, our boy Jack.
John Nada. Like, they're all, like, real strong, yeah. You know what they're going to do kind of guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this...
Yeah, I don't know what most of these characters would do, and it makes me sad. It does. I really, really, really wish that this had been the film that, like, filled my imagination when I was a kid. I can see a version of it in my head where this would have been me for a couple years, would have been my personality. Thank God the internet didn't exist the way it does now, because I've been on forums. I absolutely would have done the fanfic, yo. What tags? Like, it would have been, like, all down. I'll start my YouTube channel where I talk about all the crack ships. Like, that's what would have happened, right, if it had been a slight, like, if it had worked the way, like, it I needed it to.
Yeah,
in a selfish way.
One click further in the other. Like I say, yeah. I was 88. I was 9. Is that right? Not to put, yeah. And I came home and it was the first movie where I was like, yeah, that was fine.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just see a movie and you leave and you're like, that was a thing.
Yeah.
And but that
was
it.
That was the first one. Cause, like, I mean, every kid says the movies that were out when they were kids were a golden age, but, like, I had seen all the Star Wars movies in the theater, Karate Kid, like, you know what I mean? So, like, there's heavy hitters in there. And then you get to Willow and you're like, yeah, we went to the movies today.
Yeah, I got a toy.
Yeah, we went to Toys R Us afterward. It was cool. We got to ride in Dad's Chevette. It was great. but yeah, overall, it's one of the few movies where you're just like, yeah, that is just kind of.
Yeah.
I saw a movie today fun. And I will not remember it. Like, kind of where.
I will remember it as like a footnote for Star Wars, because I was a big Star Wars kid. Like, I was excited because it was another George Lucas thing.
And what's interesting, and Commander Dante says in our chat, like, you know, he wants a full Brownies movie or TV show. I think it's very fascinating that they did do a TV show, because there is so much there that is very, very interesting to be explored. Yeah. And it is a shame that the TV show had a season. It didn't even have a full season.
Just
Because I was like, yeah, maybe, like, you know, it'll go take that those ideas, those little things that make it impossible to just ignore it as a film. You know, I can't just say, oh, it's a bad movie. I just feel like the unfulfilled potential. And it's a shame, because I think maybe it would work better as a TV show, because you can explore all the different things, you know?
Yeah. And, well, you got more room to breathe, so you can have a cast, like a full party.
Yeah.
I will watch it, and I will report back.
Ooh, thank you. I am very curious, because, yeah, I think it allows for, I think it's so interesting how fantasy doesn't have to have a larger cast, but it almost seems built for it in some way. You know, like, you're exploring the world through character. Not always, but I feel like there is an amount of characters that are good in a fantasy.
Or they just need to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like, different enough or charming enough or whatever it is that just brings you in.
A lot of fantasy is exploration, because you are introducing the viewers to the world as your characters are. You know, your classic, like, I'm going out into the world.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm rereading a fantasy right now. It's the Burning Kingdoms trilogy. And the first book, the way it's written is it's not one person's point of view. You have lots, every chapter is kind of, you're switching between any number of people. And in some cases, it's just a guard that you see in that chapter gets murdered and then you carry on. So it's kind of interesting that you're saying that, because, like, it helps you build this world and all the different little pieces that are involved in it.
I like that. Yeah.
Highly recommend that book series. I don't know how it ends, so I could be giving you a real stinker, but the first one,
will you roll the dice with me?
They're like 500 pages a book, so.
Oh, damn.
I'll report back to you all when I get to the third one.
Sounds good. We look forward to that about Christmas time. Maybe a little earlier.
It'll be earlier.
Ask KP about it at the festival. November 5th was the night.
Oh, I'll be done by then.
Yeah. Ready.
Hell or high water.
That's interesting. I'm curious. I'm looking at, like, you know, just fantasy movies. Like, just type in fantasy movies, because I think it is a tricky genre.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was just looking in, and one of the things they mentioned is that they didn't know if it would make any money because Crawl had been out and Beastmaster had been out. And
you know what's nuts? Okay, is Beastmaster a great film? I can't tell you. I'm having too much fun.
It's fun.
Like, genuinely, right. I'll watch Beastmaster again. Like, because it has character. Those ferrets, Kodo and Bodo, are full of character, and they are ferrets. Not people turned into ferrets, magical ferrets. They're just ferrets.
Straight up ferrets.
I need to stop looking at lists that, like, rank things. I was like, oh, fantasy movies. And then I'm like, how dare Willow be above The Fall? Never.
I don't know. I think there are very, very good things where people rank things. Like Murphy's Rank the World. That's a fantastic way that people are ranking things. It can also be found on the Lunch Club Podcast Network.
It's really an elaborate con, so me and my siblings can yell at each other for an hour. It's all like, planned.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. It's really like, hey, because that's why I tell them it has to be the five best of a thing. Can't be your favorite. It has to be best objectively, because that will cause the most chaos. Let's talk about subjective things and argue them like they're objective. We're family. It's fine.
Somebody put Barbie on a list. Barbie is fantasy. These are all true. These things where it's like, I just go and I watch it and you don't even think twice about it. You know what we have to do? Has your son seen Jumanji yet?
Oh, no. We haven't seen Jumanji.
That would be interesting.
I want a front row seat. No, just... no, that one you definitely have to report back on.
You know what I'd be curious about? And another, like, recent fantasy film that nailed it, and I'm upset because I don't think we're getting a sequel. The Dungeons and Dragons,
D&D?
Yes.
Honor Among Thieves. Nailed it. Either if you have knowledge or if you don't, because I watched it with my parents, it works either way. I know what an owlbear is. You don't have to know what an owlbear is, and it's just because it gets the characters. Like it gets specifically why these characters work, and I was like, oh, they each have like their own little like. Stories. Bradley Cooper's in it. And made the best use of Bradley Cooper outside of like Rocket Raccoon that I can think of.
In a perfect world, that would have been Willow. Like that's the vibe they needed to hit.
And it is the characters. Like, what just was it the Paladin? Just that. Yes. Like, yeah, that's exactly what Paladins.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, it literally felt like a game of D&D I played. Yes, Commander. Like it feels like comfortable, but also removed from anything. It is just a good story with fun character.
Yeah, it's just and super it's like fun.
They're having a good time. A villain who's fun.
Yeah.
You know? Well, you both have the pure evil villain and the like anything for money dumbass, and I love both of those. And then the fights used powers and fights that felt like a lived in, like, oh, this is how a system would work like this. Your magic users and your melee and your ranged in a way that was just visually interesting to watch.
And of course the bit with like talking to the dead body and then he's like, oh, my question,
so right?
Like you completely understand how it works and it's very funny.
That's
and
a game I've been a part of. Yeah. We're all like, shut up. We gotta do math.
Stop it.
Shut the fuck up. The DM is listening and they're gonna take it as their actual because it's funny to take it as actual. And of course, anything with Jarnathan.
Oh, yes.
It's great.
Like, maybe the perfect joke. You're like, who's Jarnathan? Why does he care so much? Holy shit. But like, that's the joy.
Re-watch. That is a rewatch.
I was so impressed that they were able to pull that off. I've seen the other Dungeons and Dragons film. It's interesting. It's one of those ones you watch and go, why are all these decisions made? There we go. it's a real thumbs down, but like I'll order a pizza and discuss it with friends kind of movie.
It's where an eBay Bowl experience, isn't it?
Oh my, is it?
I'm pretty sure.
God, you know what? It is a miracle that Honor Among Thieves exists because of that thing.
Oh, we've got.
And Richard O'Brien's in it.
1983.
Oh, no, that was Dungeon Siege.
And then we've got 2000.
It feels like it's late 90s, early 2000s because of the vibe.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to click on the one from 2000s because.
Jeremy Irons.
Yes, the guy with the blue lips. Yes. Yes, Jeremy Irons is having fun in it. Jeremy Irons knows the assignment. Everybody else seems to be from some like 90s, like party at your parents' house movie. Like, oh man, my parents are out of town. Let's have a party. But it's a fantasy film.
Oh, that's right. It's Marlon Wayans.
Yeah, and I forget who like the guy with the floppy hair is, but he's got that like 90s, early 2000s floppy hair in a fantasy film.
Justin Whalen,
I think that's
who
him.
You would know
that's
as familiar. Jimmy Olsen from Lois and Clark.
Yep.
Or Teenage like, no. Andy from Child's Play 3.
Oh, I remember him from Serial Mom.
Oh, yeah.
I just rewatched it. It was Scotty.
Yes! Yes! Okay, yes. Yay, shout out to Mom. Another episode we did.
What a masterpiece. I rewatched that right before Mother's Day.
Every once in a while, I just got to whisper Pussy Willow.
Out of control. Out of control. I watched it recently with my sweetheart, and every time she was like, why is she making all of these bad decisions? I'm like, she doesn't care if she gets caught. She's just here to murder.
That's her.
And love her family.
Yeah. That's the entire point. Me. This is who she is.
Yeah. masterpiece of cinema.
So good. God, so
the Sam Waters did it. Holy crap. Okay. Sorry, we're talking about Will. Man, we keep getting distracted. Sorry, Will.
Oh, yeah. I think that's.
That should tell you. We've kind of. I think we've probably reached
our limit of actually talking about
the limit of Willow, which is fine because that's Willow. Like, it is a perfectly fun sit back on a Saturday afternoon and fold laundry movie. Like, it's not.
You don't have to pay attention to it every second. It's not doing what you think it's doing.
And yeah, it's partially because it's doing what you think it's doing because you've seen it kind of before a couple different times. So you just know, you know, you're never going to know where that third acorn went because that got cut from the movie.
Mad Mardigan's calling the baby. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mad Mardigan's calling the baby Sticks for reasons nobody understands because that got cut from the movie.
You know what? I bought it. Look, it's Mad Mardigan. It's Vale. He made it up on set.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm calling this baby Sticks. I'm like, all right, buddy.
Yeah. It's got real thin arms like Sticks. And that was never in the movie. Because the movie was apparently 3 fucking hours long until they cut it.
Imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't. That's too much. Yeah. But KP, to your point, totally could have been 2 90 minute movies.
Yeah.
If it were today, it would be.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It would have been Willow colon, the Daikini baby, and Willow colon, hag fight.
Yeah, Willow colon for good.
Not hag fight.
Here's the thing. If it was Willow hag fight, I'd watch that.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Listen, I'm all here for like the old lady representation and not just, you know, it's two witches, kind of, instead of one evil witch, which is, you know, pretty standard fare.
Listen, like, you know, older we get, the more history we have and the more issues I have with certain people and time to think about it. Okay. Right. I'm surprised there's not more fights. I got a list. Things I need to deal with before I shuffle off this mortal coil.
I'm glad to know you have an enemies list. I'm hopeful that I'm not on it.
Don't worry. It's mostly in pencil for now.
That's fair.
When it turns to ink, it's great. That's it. Like, yeah. That's when it's time 60. To set out.
You're buying a real nice pen.
Everyone gives
when
me pens.
50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
X. And no one knows why they're giving me pen. All I ask for is permanent ink.
Yeah.
You get one of those cool astronaut
stone
pens.
Now.
Yeah. Listen, I make it to 80. I do. I want stone and I want a chisel. Yep. You earned it.
Oh man.
Stuff, you know, a step ahead of Beatrix Kiddo.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, she's young. She had time. Yeah. She could write it in pen willy nilly on a plane.
Man. Another movie we should at some point.
And then all the other films it talks about. Yeah. Mega episode.
That would be fun. Yeah. Yeah. So this is probably the end point for Willow, I think.
yeah, we did a good job.
We did a good job. We made it about 40 minutes in for talking about Willow Strictly. Yeah. And then just kind of went to movies we liked better, which is kind of our stock in trade at a certain point. Yeah. So this has been the Anomaly Presents podcast. You know what? I'm going to do a thing because we're a little short on time and I want to fill time a little bit. We'll vamp a little bit.
Yeah.
KP shared a book series she's enjoying. Meg, what are you enjoying?
Oh, God.
I've never consumed a piece of media in my life. Yeah, I'll go back for one more second. You think of something.
And I'm like looking over. One second.
I like Booberry.
I know what I got from the library. Okay. Yes, I got this book from the library about One second.
This is very kinetic. We're doing
show and tell. It has a long title. I got it. It's called Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen, and Candy Stripe Nurses, Roger Corman, King of the Bee Movie. And it's interesting that we bring up, and it's all told with super big pictures of posters and stuff. And it's all just interviews with folks who have worked with or known Roger Corman over the decades.
Oh, cool.
So I really like that. And there actually is Ron Howard's in this.
Yeah.
Because his first big directing, like he'd done some shorts, but his first feature directing gig was through Roger Corman because, young Ron Howard deciding that like he didn't just want to do acting, like he couldn't just be, you know, Opie or do Happy Days, wanted to do directing. So he said, okay, I'll act in one of your films and then you got to let me direct one. Did he direct another one after that for Corman? No, of course he didn't. But he speaks fondly of the experience, the fact that Corman gave him a shot.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, sure, kid, direct the movie.
He had to because that hairline started running back on him real early.
Yeah. You know what? He saw the future and he knew that the director's cap was for him. And I do appreciate that. Like, yeah. what a great thought process to go, I don't want to burn out like the others. I'm making movies. And then he did. And they're fine.
Yeah. Dante jumping in saying that they liked Dragon's Dawn by Anne McCaffrey. So check that out.
Yeah.
So far, no dragons, just sci-fi.
Dragons,
come on. Just imagine last page. And then the dragons show up. Oh,
it's a sequel. So what about you? What are you?
It's a book I want to read. I just found out that exists. Will Sloan, the co-host of the Important Movie Podcast with Justin DeClue, Toronto legend behind, you know, all sorts of cool stuff at Gold Ninja Video. Will Sloan has written a book about Ed Wood and his entire kind of oeuvre and how he did things.
That's cool.
And it's the flip side of, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's the book that the screenwriters from Ed Wood kind of used as their Bible to write the movie. This is the other side of it. Like, this is the critical side of it.
Oh, fascinating.
And I heard him talk about it on the Dana Gould Hour podcast, which is 3.5 hours long, just to throw that out there. So I highly recommend the latest episode of the Dana Gould Hour podcast if you have 3.5 hours, and also Will Sloan's book about Ed Wood.
Hey, you know what? Talking about the opposite of everything going smoothly, and I think why Ed Wood films are always interesting, whether they work or not, is, you know, it was all like glue and shit they picked up off the street, and, you know, filming in places that what's a permit, or someone has an octopus. Does it work? No, just get in there and you move those tentacles. And I think you see that in those films, though. You see I need to make something.
Oh, yeah. And that's, yeah. That was his exact point at one of the times when he was talking about, because they do a lot of screenings now of movies that aren't Plan 9. He's like, Plan 9 is the easy one to show because people kind of, you know, he's like, there's a room full of Tom Servos just goofing on it. And he's like, at a certain point, you're just like, okay, cool. What movie did you make that people are watching 70 years later? Like,
that's kind of the
angle that he takes. And he's like, the more interesting movie to do if you're doing an Ed Wood screening right now is Glenn or Glenda.
Oh, hell yeah. Because he's doing this in what, 60 something?
Yeah.
Fuck, right?
Yeah. So if you look at it from the
53.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
1953. Yeah. So if you look at it from the 2025 lens, it's mind blowing because it is such a it's a piece of art, failed or not, that has such a specific point of view and has it just like, it's super interesting. So yeah, I recommend that. Also the Important Movie Podcast is great. If you are a podcast movie fan or a movie podcast fan, that's one to check out.
I like both of them.
Yes. One to check out. Justin DeClue and Will Sloan are great. Anyway, this has been Anomaly Presents. I've been Matt Austin. I've got Megan Murphy with me. I've got Kristen Pelkacheco with me. We are the Podcastronauts. We've been talking about Willow, a movie that is probably marginally more successful than Glenn or Glenda, definitely more so than Plan 9 from Outer Space. We do a film festival every year. This is going on year 8, I believe.
7?
Something like that. 7. Who's counting?
Who's counting? You know, after 5, whatever.
Yeah,
we did it, guys. It's another year. Like
we did it. But we are eyeballs deep in programming, trying to figure out what the best stuff to put up on that screen for you. November 5th through the 9th. We do all this work pretty much 9 months a year to make sure that you have a great time for 4 days a year. Please come and join us. And I guarantee you'll have fun. If you don't, I will buy you popcorn.
That's a guarantee.
That is the Anomaly Presents guarantee. If you don't enjoy the movie, I will buy you a kid-sized popcorn at the Little because I'm
good. I like laying down the
I'm broke.
I said,
this is a volunteer run organization.
Volunteer run organization.
Cup full of popcorn.
I got a mortgage and a kid. Like we got to be realistic about things. I love you, but goddamn. So yeah, November 5th through the 9th. AnomalyFilmFest.com. Keep an eye out on social media. Megan does an absolutely stellar job at Anomaly Film Fest on all of your social medias. Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, kind of.
Unless they post stuff. Wait, do they post stuff from Instagram on Threads?
Sometimes.
Like automatically?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Okay, we are not officially on Threads. I have not said yes to Threads. Threads is jacking our stuff.
So if it's a Meta product, it may leak into it somewhere. But if you really want to know what's going on without us, check out Instagram. Meg does a killer job on Instagram. So yeah, follow us, like us, subscribe, whatever the fuck it is you do on that, do that. Yeah. So we love you. We will see you soon. Hopefully we'll see you at the movies in November or sooner. Come hang out anytime. We've got a screening. We probably have one coming soon. If not, maybe keep an eye on Meg's social media.
No, Anomaly social media. I mean, you can watch my social media too, but there's weirder stuff on there. Weirder than Anomaly, Megan? Yes.
Yes.
That's Anomaly Film Fest on all your socials. Keep an eye out there and all sorts of cool shit will happen. All right. So anyway, thanks very much for hanging out with us. We will talk to you again very soon. See you later. Bye.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Yay.
Yay.